This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current frontrunner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10, for you and up to three of your friends. And you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America. What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, standing 6'2", 286 pounds. That's right, listeners, if you've listened to a number of episodes, I have lost 10 pounds and I'm fucking proud. From South Shore of Nassau County, Long Island, he's the number one fuckboy. All you gotta do is trust me, Jackson Maine. Joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabrus. Arthur is a dog. He will not be talking on the microphone. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, this is always a weird moment for me when I have on hosts of podcasts that I listen to weekly. It's very confusing because I just literally put the shoe on the other foot myself. Put your motherfucking hands together for the QAnon Anonymous podcast. It's got Julian, Jake, and Travis.
Whoa.
Damn, that's the best intro I've ever had in my life.
I hope you guys can talk for the next 20 minutes because I need to go get my inhaler and turn the air conditioning
Gabrus,
on.
Gabrus, when you pointed to your dog, you were just pointing to a vaporizer.
Yeah, my man.
There's the dog. It looks like he just hit the vaporizer.
Aw, cute. Yeah, he does. He's very cute.
Yeah, my background is really a 15-year-old kid's house, to be honest. So I apologize. You guys all seem to be
true. It's okay.
I also love Napoleon references in their paintings.
Yeah, I'm also a 13 to 15-year-old at heart. I was looking at Amazon late last night because I couldn't sleep for BMX bikes because I couldn't afford one when I was 13, and I want one now. My partner is like, what the fuck are you doing? She's like, you're almost 40 years old. Like, these bikes are made for children.
Jake, dude, no exaggeration. I wanted a GT Dino so bad my whole life. I spent way too much money the year after I like stopped riding bikes to get one when I was like finally had a lifeguarding job. I was like, and now I have like a commute to work on my bike and I buy a GT Dino because I'm so happy it gets stolen in 7 days.
Oh,
7 days
dude.
Later. Stolen. And I was like, you know what, Ashton? Now you saying that, I want to get fucking pegs. I
want
to be out there riding my wife to the fucking farmer's market on my pegs.
Dude, I have a fucking similar story. I had this, like, I think it might have been a girl's bike. Like, my parents couldn't afford the GT Dino. So I got, like, a hand-me-down BMX bike from, like, a family friend. It was, like pipe white. Like, it literally
PVC.
Looked... It was, like, PVC white and possibly made out of PVC. It had these front, like, fold-down pegs in the front that were, like, these plastic fold-down and whatever. It was pretty chill. I rode around it on a while. And then high school came. You know, my mom was telling me, you know, BMX riding isn't cool. Kids in high school don't think that's cool. They think getting good grades, you know, and planning for college and your future is cool. So I decided to sell the bike. I lined up a buyer. His name was Scotty. He was like an extreme sports kid. And after school, I had ridden the bike to school and I was like, all right, man, I'll show you after. I've got it locked on the bike racks. After school, sure enough, you know where the story's going. We walk out, we walk to the bike racks and the shit is gone.
And
stolen.
And Scotty doesn't know.
And Scotty, Scotty does it. I was so he was like cooler. He was like a little bit of a in the like higher sort of social tier than I was. So I felt like an absolute loser. It was awful, and I never wrote
also,
again.
The second you said you always wished you had a BMX bike and couldn't afford one is the second I knew you were almost 40 as a 39-year-old myself. I was like, yeah, I can guess this dude's age. I remember the 3 years that that was popular. We were in our adolescence.
Man. Inline skates, yo-yos, BMX bikes, devil sticks. I mean, these are a few of my favorite things.
Let's go, boys. I think we can put together three really boring, interminable minutes on maybe like the basketball shoes that you could pump.
Oh, yeah.
The pumps.
Oh.
Let's go. Let's go.
What
Let's
were
talk
they
about
again?
Useless shit no one cares about. Let's go.
They were called
I think they were just called pumps.
Yeah, like,
yeah they were.
Reebok pumps.
Yeah, I had Spalding pumps, the knockoffs from Marshalls that were black and white, not even the cool tennis one or basketball.
Oh, I was going to say, dude, and the tennis ball ones
at the time,
poverty, very embarrassing.
Yeah, I got roasted relentlessly. I don't know what I'm from an island called Long Island where people are brutal to each other every single day.
I've heard of the iced tea.
I survived somehow, but holy shit, did I get annihilated. Also, then I changed schools. I showed up to my first day of class in a puff paint Ying Yang crew neck sweatshirt. And everyone was like, dude, you need to get jeans and t-shirts right now. I was in like a sweatsuit in like seventh grade. People were like, welcome to the... I had to like go ask my mom for jeans. Which was a conversation. If you imagine the poverty conversation is like, why not? You already have three pairs of pants. What do you need jeans for?
You want to hear something so funny? I had the opposite convo where I was fully ready to go into my high school career with my favorite like purple pair of sweatpants that I'd worn for that I'd worn like out in and out of puberty. And my mom was like, Jake. She goes, high school kids, they don't wear sweatpants. You're going to get made fun of. And I was like, well, what do they wear? She was like, jeans. And at the time, I was like, oh, jeans, they're so stiff and uncomfortable. I've been living free for the last, 12 years. Like, oh, I was so disappointed and upset.
Wow, your mom is really plugged into high school culture, huh?
Yeah. Well, she's like, she was a
high school
teacher.
You can't have the pacifier in.
In my junior high, though, that was huge. I don't want to, like, for 14 and 15-year-old girls in the 90s, they all rocked pacifiers on necklaces.
Oh, I thought that was just like a doing ecstasy at raves shit. Was there like a spillover of plur kind of stuff?
Yeah, wide leg pants and shit, and like girls all wore like the space bun. They all dressed like ravers, even though they were 13, and there was no way they were doing ecstasy.
I remember.
I definitely had like the Jenko jeans with like the skunk stripe down the side. I know what's up.
I can imagine.
The wider the gauge,
I can imagine
the better. You're like, I need to get the mammoths, bro. 40 inches. It's wearing two skirts at once. It rules.
It's true that basically like fashion at that time was like you either cosplay like a surfer or you cosplay a skater. Mm-hmm. Or I guess you could cosplay a raver, but like, yeah, it was all, I mean, I wore like, girl t-shirts and like Jenko jeans and like skate shoes, even though I couldn't even fucking ollie up a curb.
I remember I was a decent skater. I was like fairly good. I could land kick flips. I could do minimal, low to the ground grinds. But you reminded me, Gabrus, talking about the girls with the pacifiers around their neck. I vaguely remember this, and also like chains of that lip balm was like soda pop flavored and shit.
Yes,
Lip smackers. Lip smackers is what it was called. And all these girls, they had like the chain, the necklaces of like all of these different flavors. And I was jealous actually because they smelled and tasted so good. I mean, it was like I was like, why can't they make these for dudes? I want a cherry cola chapstick.
Travis, did you do any cringe stuff, or were you just kind of like a chill dude that everyone was friends with because like he would help with homework?
I know. I mean, I was a drama kid, so that was pretty cringe. So
say no more. You're sold. I sold. No, I'm kidding.
Say no more. You'll have no pussy, sir.
Did you stick with it for a while, drama?
Not really. I mean, it was a fun, it was a fun, like, creative outlet, you know, and I enjoy the process of, like, you know, working with other people to try and make something. That sort of desire kind of, like, carried over into adulthood. But, like, acting is not something that ever really appealed to me, I'll be honest.
What is what we do, Travis, except a long community play that none of us can escape from anymore?
Well.
And you can't see the audience at all.
There's no audience, and you have to act with people who believe that Hillary Clinton eats babies.
Oh, that what a thank you for the segue setup here. Speaking of cringe, you guys are steeped in and students of and masters of and explainers to tour guides of a subculture or a cult, a movement, whatever you want to call it, that is fucking both simultaneously so scary and so funny that right. It's maybe it the fact that it's funny, and I'm not saying anything you guys haven't said before. I've been listening to your podcast for like mm-hmm. a year now. So like, but the fact that it's funny, I think lets QAnon get away with more shit that like, yeah. Because people are like, oh, those freaks, forget it. And it's like, but there are real fucking bad actors in the crew.
Yeah, no, of course. You know, that's the eternal problem is that we live in like the fascism fail compilation era where it's actually working, you know, and that's it would be funny, but it is pretty scary and tragic that they're, you know, that the fascist movement has lost the dignity it once had. Right. Right, guys.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like
it's the old, you know, the Nazis at least wore Hugo Boss. They're at least snappy dressers. They're, you know, but nowadays is that now they look like the Q shaman. Oh, just not.
Yeah.
Not
now
quite
they wear
cool.
like the Matrix, like long leather trench coats instead.
That's well, now the cool. umbrella is, I feel like, is getting bigger. You can have someone in a Matrix trench coat. You can have someone in like. Body paint American mm-hmm. flag bikini, and you can have somebody in like fully adopting another culture as their style, and then you can have someone yeah. dressed as a shaman, and yep. they're all in the same crew. So
yeah,
it's
because
like a
they
Burger
all have
King's
the same
kids club of psychos.
They all have the same desires that have been warped and basically rendered impotent, and so they're like worms squirming against their own impotence. Like the rest of us, except for them, it is twisted beyond recognition. So it's like rage against the fake machine or rage against the machine that you're having a hallucination of instead of the even more scary, oftentimes, reality behind it.
Well, and I think for them, you know, I think, you know, for the rest of us, there are some things that we, you know, we kind of believe. We're like, you know, that could be possible, or like, that seems plausible. But to them, it's like, no, this is definitely happening. I know it is. And there's like, you know, there's nothing that you can say that's going to make me change my mind.
I've done the bias confirmation bias research already. I've already watched 25 hours of YouTube videos of people who believe the same things as me. And yeah. I constitute that as research. So whatever you're coming. Oh, where'd you get this from? Newspapers, authors, journalists, get out of here with that bullshit.
I think what links us to these people, though, is that we're all tasked with the same thing. Wading through this flat sea of content and information to build an identity from things that we consume or appreciate and want to identify with. It just so turns out that if everyone's doing that all at once in this kind of open market, there's a certain amount of people that are, yeah, they're just going to go off to the side and build like an insane, like bloodthirsty cult because that is something that we haven't shaken out of the culture at all. And we don't really want to look at that. Yeah. It's uncomfortable for us to imagine that we live with people who might believe these things and always have and control, you know, levers of government and this and that.
One of the biggest takeaways I got from you guys was how these beliefs have been around for so long and they keep coming back in different outfits. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I remember the D&D scare and all that shit when I was mm-hmm. a kid, because I was a little D&D kid. That was my first foray into like, people are just wrong about stuff. Like, right.
You're a comedian, right? So commedia dell'arte, you look back fondly, you're like, damn, what an interesting phase, you know? And for them, it's like, damn, you remember those pogroms that we did after the Protocol of the Elders of Zion, like, took flame, you know? Like that it's just looking back on, like, your role in society.
Yeah, it's when like they get the Marc Maron question, who's your guys? And they answer with like, oh, you Joseph Mengele. And
you ever heard of Charles Murray? You ever heard of the bell curve?
Oh. He's my guy. He's my guy. Charles Murray. Yeah, he loved to riff. He riffed on stuff, race stuff.
Now, is it bigger and stronger and more powerful now? Or is it we're just more, it's more visible now than ever before? It feels like, because we have politicians kind of repeating some of this stuff, and I don't know how powerful someone like MTG or Gates saying shit in the House, like, I don't know what that really has an effect on the big sway, but it feels like that, but I feel like there was previously politicians who believed in all the same terrible shit.
Travis was actually with Gates and Green just recently, so and I think he'd be perfect to answer this question.
I mean, what I've really noticed is that there's certainly, and I guess I don't know if it's you call it insurgent, because you know, I guess Trump was in power for 4 years, but there's this wing of the Republican Party that is very fervent and just wholly grievance based and wholly based on aesthetics and nothing else, and just live for like owning the libs. I mean, when I went there, they often talked about how at least the attendees of the Gates Green rally, that they were actually glad that Marjorie Taylor Greene was kicked off of her committees, because that gave her more time to spread her message, because that's what they talk. That's what they love. They love it. You know, it's all a performance. It's all a spectacle to them.
Now she'll have free time to light a bag of her shit on fire outside of AOC's office or whatever.
No,
the
they really imagine that she's dropping in like full tack gear from like the ceiling glass like over AOC and taking out like the pedo cabal like farms underneath like in the tunnels. Like many of them, if you ask them, what do you want her to do? It would be it's such a kind of vicious and weird specific thing. Always like, yeah, whatever my thing is, man, that thing I can't stop fucking thinking about. Transgender people in our bathrooms, that's the one, or you know, whatever else. Oh, illegal immigrants taking my, you know, whatever it is. She speaks directly to the id of like that kind of voter.
Yeah, yeah. And when you believe when your base level sort of ideology is that any kind of like functioning government is deep state run or cabal run, your people sort of getting kicked out of positions of power, you know, or kicked off of committees, it is this like self eating loop that it's like, oh, well, that's because, you know, they're fighting, or that's because the deep state's trying to, you know, get her out of Congress. And that means it's good, you know, all of this stuff. And so what, you know, you and I would look at is like, oh man, well, this person seriously needs to get their shit together if they want to, you know, remain a sort of functioning member of the government. They look at as like, hell yeah, like stick it to the cabal, stick it to the deep state. And so you know these politicians that do sort of dog whistle to the, or not even dog whistle, but directly sort of play into the, you know, the QAnon community, they love it. I mean, it's
well, I think one of the major problems with society in general, me, a guy who's fucking 39 and smokes weed every day, but like I think a major problem is like everyone really want, and myself included, and that's, I'm part of the problem in a way, just wants attention, just wants the feedback. I see it with like not like I have, you know, a little bit of a social media following. Like if I tag a friend that doesn't, like I could, I watch, like I, like I've seen family members' faces be like, whoa, all these light, and you see it like, this feels so good, and you're like, oh no. And then people get like addicted to that, and then everyone starts playing to the people who give it back to them the most. So everyone's playing to like the most loyal base, and like and with Patreon and all these other things, we can like shrink and our niches down to where if they just convince 1,000 people to listen to their podcast, a QAnon heads and blood libel freaks and all this, and saying like they can make fucking $10,000 a month and feel like that means that they are right.
Yeah, but we're also desperately alone. And I think we all feel that kind of emptiness and that loneliness. And so I think, like, the same way, for example, if you look at Antifa and people are like, oh, let's talk about Antifa, the movement and this and that. Really what it is a kind of set of methods to defend communities against fascism that people have passed on in this kind of, you know, like, decentralized way throughout the generations, honestly, since the Nazis. But this, in the same way, QAnon is just it's a set of methods to understand the world. And they are going for it because in their desperation and their loneliness that we all experience, this is like the last thing they have left. This is it. Like, this is the one that they're like, they're holding on to dear life for, because otherwise their brain is already at the snapping level. I mean, you look at school shootings and stuff like this. This is such a worse epidemic than any of the killings that QAnon could ever dream of accomplishing. And it's like every single week, an unending amount of it. So for many people, when that snapping point comes, they just go, well, what if I emptied all the things I used to know and replaced it completely with this new method to understand the world through? And now it's a lens for me when I go on social media, and it's how I find meaning. And we all do that to a certain extent, which is we're in a bizarre place where that has become a really valuable product.
Their lens is adaptable too. As things go on, they're like, oh, wait, that JFK Jr. We don't really talk about that anymore. Like, this
That's
is
it.
The
There's
new
methods.
Belief system.
There's What's methods. That? It's like, if we need to flush something, this is what we say. If we need to, like, counter an argument, this is what we say. And so to us, it's like, look at this zombies, this cult. And they're like, no. One of the, like, 10 things that we do here is think for ourselves. Like, so they don't understand that we think they don't think for themselves. Because for them, it's like, well, I'm floating through blurry JPEGs here. Like, what the fuck are you doing all day? Oh,
what are
you're
you
just
doing?
Going to CNN? That's easy shit.
Yeah,
amateur.
Watching MSNBC. And MSNBC, that's only one person. That's only one person telling you the narrative. I have 15 different narratives that I can pick and choose from.
Right.
But they're also real people to me. They're real people. They're not just in the TV. They're people that I might meet up with. They're people that I relate to. They're people I'm forming community with. And we're seeing that in this late stage after all the censorship on the mainstream media platforms, social media platforms. We're seeing them migrate to Telegram, which is, like, so prone to socializing that now you have these channels that have, like, 60-person conversations that are ongoing. Like, everyone's on the phone line all the time with each other, chatting, processing, posting stuff together.
They're regressing back to
smaller,
the AIM days.
But denser and more emotional.
There's some, like, Ludovico, like, the Clockwork Orange treatment to themselves too. I feel like they're accident. Like, I think we're all, like, a lot of people are doing it. Like, you know, like the Slender Man kids, like, you know, all that shit. Like,
right.
I feel like the just eating a fucking funnel of information like this, like just these retirees or in the last year, people who were laid off or working from home, just watching like 9 hours of streams a day of just different people saying super bombastic, like fucking violence inducing or calls to arms and shit. And you just watch that shit all day. I think you get fucking worked. I've worked on absolutely awful TV shows, absolutely terribly unfunny comedy projects. But on day five of working on it, you fully are caught up. You are like, this is actually turning, like, this is actually, like, because you're just in it too much where it starts to be like, this is the way, like Mandalorian. It's like, this is the way, like, all that exists is this terrible fucking show I'm about to put out. And then when someone watches it, it's like, it's terrible. It's like, it felt like it was really terrible, but we got caught up in the excitement of making something.
That's it. And, like, let's look at, like, how weird it is, obviously, to go for, like, old school baby eating cabal, like, belief system. But then how weird is it to end up organically attracted to it to the point where you study it endlessly? And that's us three. So, like, we chose, we looked at the buffet of stuff and we're like, oh, we're going to have, like, this thing that's sitting right next to the most rotten food on the entire buffet. Like, we also are somehow. So, yeah, Travis, why are you drawn to it? Because you came to it before all of us.
I'm going to grab my rolling supplies real quick.
All right.
For this convo, it's necessary.
Everyone's grabbing rolling supplies, it looks like. Now it's Travis and I,
everyone's taking off. So, I mean, I really came to it. I mean, originally I was, back in the early 2000s, I was really interested in creationism and young earth creationism. And specifically, this is the belief that the world is only 6,000 years old. Noah's flood happened 4,000 years ago. And there are a bunch of these promoters, and some of them were like Dr. Kent Hovind. He called himself a doctor. He was not. And also Ken Ham, who of the organization Answers in Genesis. And they're promoting this bizarre belief system. It was like, the world, the planet Earth is 4.5 billion years old. Like, it's not when you say it's 6,000, that's not a small error. It's a massively, and I feel like it's bizarre to me, because like they use lead argon dating specifically in order to date that far back. And I was like, oh man, it was after years and years, generations and generations of wondering why are we here? How old is this planet? How do things work in the physical universe, right? We figured it out. We figured some things out really well, really precisely. And it's a miracle. We should feel blessed to know that the world is approximately 4.5 billion years old. And all of a sudden there is this community of mostly American evangelical Christians, because as I often know, in Catholics, they're usually really open to science. They're great, many Catholic great scientists, mm-hmm. but American evangelical Christians, they're like, oh no, we don't like those answers. We like the old ones. We like we like this one that just says it's 6,000 years old and everything in the universe is that old. Bizarre to me. It blew my mind that someone would reject something that's so true and for this obvious fantasy. And so I tried to figure out, like, why do they believe it? I tried to figure out their arguments and why they don't believe in things like, radioactive dating or even like stuff like fucking tree rings. Because you can count back tree rings about 12,000 years and right. They don't believe in...
Everyone has to live with this shit, Travis, but why did you choose to spend so much time studying it? What is it in you that drives you to this point?
Because I don't know. Because I really think we do live... Honestly, it's this weird, I guess, skeptical atheist, Richard Dawkins, annoying bullshit thing where I feel blessed to live in the scientific age. For so long, humanity lived in just confusing darkness. And when we had to rely upon fantasies and fables to make sense of our bullshit theories, like, the humor theory of illness, make sense of the world.
Your throat is sore. Rub this colored toad onto your nostrils.
it was all horrifying. But thanks to like generations of people who like devoted their lives to collecting data and empiricism, I don't have to live in that era. And I feel blessed for that. But there are some people who just reject that gift. And it was like, why? Why? This is better. I'm glad I live in this era now. Right?
Travis, I want to get cancer and be put in a bathtub full of leeches. What's wrong with you?
Exactly.
I want to go get a shave and a prostate exam from
I felt disconnected from these people because it was so bewildering to me. And I wanted to understand where they are coming from.
I feel like an element of what you're talking about maybe is this. I'm a curious person. I feel like that's a pretty positive trait to have. And then when you learn new cool information, like, hey, a group of geniuses figured out how old the world is. You're right. Like, as a curious person, you're like, that's such interesting news. That's so cool. I now know that. I can't wait to learn more. I think there are people who are like, whoa, that challenges my worldview. No way I'm going to like, fuck. Yeah. Rather than being impressed by it, like, I don't understand how religion doesn't just start lying more. Like, they already lie so much. All you have to do is be like, it wasn't exactly 6 days he built it in. It was kind of like, it wasn't exactly this. You know, it's kind of metaphorical. Then they can have even more leeway. I feel like people are so, they refuse to break their structures that fit them best for them. They like someone, they self-building the structure that fits best for them.
I think that there's like a group of people, there are some people who, if somebody else discovers it, it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I couldn't touch it. I don't know. I'm supposed to believe this asshole. And so there are some people that want to, if they haven't discovered it for themselves, it's like it doesn't exist, you know? And that definitely plays into the whole sort of radicalization process with QAnon, is you do these, you know, these deep dives into you know, YouTube and, you know, various streams, Telegram channels, and you teach yourself these things. And it's as if you're uncovering it, which is kind of part of its insidiousness.
Yeah, you know? And also it's, you're right, I didn't even think of this, and it's sort of stickiness. Like, mm-hmm. If you discover it, like, you know, like when you, a dude who's like, you know, is like, yeah, I learned instrument at home, or like, or a person has got like, I've been teaching myself karate from a book, and then like, it's like, they meet a karate instructor, and it's like, bro, where the fuck did you learn it? It's like, well, I kind of taught it to myself. It's like, you're not an expert. But like,
that's what's so fascinating, is that it was developed literally in the Chans, 4chan and 8chan, and it emerged from it as the kind of the main story, because it was so sticky. It was literally in an incubator to make sure it was sticky once it went out to the world.
Right.
It was designed that way. It was designed to be the thing that people who want to educate themselves through, like reading message boards or going online and digging a little deeper, it was designed to be the stickiest for their minds, because it had been tested against thousands of them ruthlessly over years. It had been workshopped organically by this group.
And then think about, like, literally image boards of graphic imagery, like scrolling through. That is the Ludovico tree. That, like, is like famously a torture device to just flash brutal images to people. And that's like a website that has a huge amount of audience. I mean, there are a lot of people using the site for not that. But
I'd say that Facebook has the exact same thing. We're Ludovico when we're scrolling Facebook too. We're all Ludovico. The question is, what are the images on the screen? But we're all like locked, eyes open on this like endless thing that is monetized.
For me, it's all
of
like female powerlifters and female bodybuilders and shit.
Hilariously, if anything, there's something more noble about 4 or 8chan, because no one ever fucking managed to make money off that shit. It's just it's a financial collapse, whereas the other ones are monetized to fuck you. And they, by the way, Q could have not existed without them, without the YouTube algorithms. I want to thank, I'm doing my acceptance speech now for Q. I'd like to thank Facebook. I'd like to thank the algorithms at many different companies.
I have a theory, and I don't think it's been scientifically tested, but it feels right to me, which is part of the problem, but I'm going to say it anyways. And it goes back to something that you guys were saying a little bit earlier about feeling alone and feeling like, you know, wanting to sort of carve your identity out of the things that you watch. And I think that's what's happening to people, is we all watch the same shit. It's like, I have this conversation with my partner all the time. She'll walk into the room and she'll be like, oh, did you see Kim Kardashian? And I'm like, oh yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I saw it. Or did you see the video going around of this? And it's like, oh yeah, I saw it. And it's like, we all watch the same videos. We all sort of are, you know, aware of like what's trending. And I think that nobody feels authentic anymore, because we're all watching the same shit. We're talking about the same news stories. We're talking about the same videos that are going around. We're talking about the same social media posts, the same celebrities. And
or we feel we do, but we aren't.
Or we feel we do.
Not with the rest of the world, not even with the rest of our state. That's just the feeling that the system is designed to give you. Hey, it's all looking at this together. It's very important. Whatever it is, whether it's like a fucking article about Hillary eating babies or like the announcement that Lady Gaga is going to have a child. It's like the thing, everyone, the spectacle, look, point. Oh, and that's what we do. We're just tourists in this endless stream of garbage, and we're lonely.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think people are desperate to feel like authentic. What's something that is authentic to me, that is mine, you know, that sets me apart from, you know, the rest of the NPCs or whatever, you know, whatever they call them. And so, you know, I think that stuff like conspiracy theories are especially sticky nowadays, because it makes you feel like you are an insider, like
an exotic kind of person. It is. It's like a quirk. It's like writing a quirk into a character that would make them particular or interesting. People go, well, what? I'm going to like Lady Gaga? No, fuck that. She's a Satanist. Oh, that's the cool take. That's the good one. That's the right one.
And I mean, for me, I know you, Travis was talking about, you know, what got him interested in this stuff. And for me, my interest was, on a base level, I agree with some of their grievances. I do think that there is a massive separation of wealth in America that you can work. I remember because I fucked around with acting for a little bit too. And I remember I got my first gig and I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is going to be the thing that takes me out of the poverty line. I finally have a big chunk of change. I can save. I can put towards. This is it. I'm finally going to kind of graduate out of this sort of like poverty level. And I remember I got my paycheck, and because it was a larger amount of money in a shorter amount of time, it got taxed way more than yeah. than my normal shit. And here I was like thinking I was going to make, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, and it ended up being a couple, you know, it paid off you know, some car repairs, and then I was like right back to where I started. I was like, yeah. I don't feel like, even when I do the impossible, in this specific case, booking an acting job, impossible. It's impossible.
Terribly hard, trust
it's
me.
It's fucking impossible.
I am bad at it, so I'm sure other people do better, but it is not fucking easy. Do not feel bad, Jake.
It is not easy. And so even then, I've accomplished what I thought was the impossible. And here I still am at this level of poverty. I you know, on one level, I can see where they're coming from, and that's why I'm fascinated by it. But it's the details that I think they get right. wrong, or the sort of solution, I guess, is where we, you know, where we differ.
I wanted to go back to like that thing about the loneliness too, because basically, I think what's left for us after, like, what Jake described, that Sisyphus-like approach that or relationship that most people have with the job market or their everyday life and just the bullshit they have to put up with to get health insurance and all this stuff. It's just like you roll the fucking rock up, it rolls back down, and it sucks. So your only real outlet is to upload an image of yourself to the spectacle that would be so resplendent that it would transform you in some way, or you would see yourself in the spectacle and be... and feel good for just maybe one moment. And that's what this participative kind of stuff is, whether it's posting to Facebook, your uncle's doing lib posting to like Rachel Maddow, or QAnon people. You know, it's we desperately know that we have no chance at immortality in a system that's just going to chew us up and push us down. And so we're like, the only thing I got is that fucking Polaroid of the one moment where my post went viral, or I looked really great in that photo and I saw myself in the spectacle and I felt like I belonged, because all there is the spectacle. So if I'm not in it, I'm apart and I'm alone. And that's terrifying.
Well, and Julian brings up a good point too. On the opposite side of the political spectrum, if you're a Democrat, you know, we're supposed to be the good guys, and yet there's still a fucking massive immigration problem. We're still fucking, you know, spending billions and billions and billions of dollars on you know, wars overseas, and you know, somebody like QAnon comes along and you're like, oh goody, like these freaks, evil, you know, it's a sense to be like, oh well, at least, you know, however I feel about myself, at least there is a group of people that is like, has so othered themselves that it makes me feel better. And so
to clarify what you mean about the immigrant, you said there was an immigration problem, you mean the treatment of migrant children and the housing and all
yes,
that stuff?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, just needed to clarify, because you're like, there's an immigration problem, and I was like, oh, Rush Limbaugh has logged on.
I meant that ostensibly, like, nothing has really changed in terms of the treatment of people who are trying to seek yes. asylum in the United
exactly.
States.
Exactly, yes.
Hit me right in the feels.
Feels? You mean FEALS, the premium CBD company that's delivered directly to your doorstep? Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. It hit me right in the feels. The feels that naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. All you got to do is place a few drops of feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes. I personally like a little. I'm getting up and I'm recording these ads last minute. I just had a dropper of feels under my tongue as I pour myself a coffee. And I will have some again I had some last night when I went to sleep, and I'll have some again when I go to sleep tonight. If you're new to CBD, Feels offers a CBD hotline that can help you guide through like your personal experience. You don't have to deal with it that way. And it works naturally to help you. There's no high, there's no hangover, there's no addiction. And it's a membership. So if you join, you get Feels delivered every month. You'll save a bunch of money on your order, and you can pause or cancel anytime.
All right, now it's time for your offer. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/mighty, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/mighty to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. That's a hell of a deal. feals.com/mighty. Yo, Hello Fresh. Yes, I am a huge fan of the Hello Fresh meal delivery service, where you get your pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered directly to your door. Now, everyone, you know, probably talks about how nutritious and delicious and how simple it is and all that. But two things that I think I want to low-key point out on this ad is the sustainability of it all. You're buying less, you're wasting less food, you're not driving to and from the grocery store. They are a first carbon neutral meal kit. They offset 100% of carbon emissions. HelloFresh's carbon footprint is 25% lower than store-bought grocery main meals. So there's some good sign. But for me, the low-key thing I love most about HelloFresh is removing the decision of what to eat for dinner. I don't know about you guys, but being in a relationship or in a family, I'm assuming, you know, there comes a time in every day where you start going, okay, what are we thinking for dinner? What do we have in the fridge? Are we going to order? Are we going to go out? Do we have to do this? Do we have leftovers that we can make into something new tonight? With HelloFresh, you're just like, oh, it's Thursday? Okay, well, we have the HelloFresh meal. What is it? Who cares? It's going to be delicious. And guess what? Either one of us can cook it because it's from HelloFresh. So it's super easy and it takes 30 minutes or less. So that for me is all the important stuff. I mean, like, there goes, you know, I love the Gouda burgers. I've talked about them like countless times on this episode. I'm such a fan. Man, you guys are like, stop talking about the Gouda burgers. But once you have them, you'll know what I'm talking. So go to HelloFresh.com/high14 and use code high14 for up to 14 free meals plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/high14 and use code high14 for up to 14 free meals plus free shipping. HelloFresh.com/high14, America's number one meal kit. There's almost something like that benefits people. There's now such a bottom shown by like QAnon and extreme white nationalism of like, this is absolutely disgusting, that people who are just kind of classic scumbag politicians, which the Democrats have a lot of, we're just like, oh, thank God we have this guy. He's not Marjorie Taylor Greene. It's like, what has this guy done for us, though? Like, this guy is not playing the game we want. He's still becoming super rich. He's still squashing healthcare. He's still getting juiced up by pharmaceuticals. He's still doing all this bad stuff. But at least he's not fucking 17-year-old girls on Venmo or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
High horse, but also kind of, we're spray painting a turd gold.
Yeah, the standards are much low. I mean, basically, you know, since Trump, the standards are so fucking low that you can still be your run-of-the-mill scumbag politicians, and people will worship. They will put your fucking face on a t-shirt because at least you are not as bad as that guy and the people that hang around with him. Yeah. For sure.
And
that's also it.
We're lonely. We want a sense of superiority to somebody. If we're pushed at the bottom, if the rock keeps rolling down the hill, then God damn it, like, it's got to be someone's fucking fault. I want to find someone to fight, and guess what? I can't fight the things that are actually affecting any of these conditions for me.
Right.
I know that that's futile. My whole life has taught me that through the political process. Okay, cool. So what's next? And you either start a podcast or you join QAnon. It's normal.
Oof. Jake, you said something that touched on what got me into the whole thing, and like, reading, I don't even care about weird beliefs. Like, I'm an atheist too, but like, the religious stuff doesn't even bother. It's the people who are faking it and taking advantage of it and like spiking it, you know, like making it more powerful, but benefiting from it. The grifters, if you will. Those people bother me to such a degree in any direction that was the thing that got me into being angry about them was mm-hmm. like, I fucking yeah. hate, like, and fandom, I think, is like a weird, people call it tribalism, people call it all different shit, but I think, like, there's like, anytime there's fandom, whether it's like religion or like a template to live your life, like masculinity or whatever, there's a chance for it to become toxic. And we mm-hmm. saw it with like Star Wars and Marvel. And yeah. why yeah. wouldn't it also be with Jewish people and abortions? Like, why wouldn't people just be okay with having insanely violent opinions about these things?
I've yeah. seen Travis View fans tear people apart with adjectives that you've never even read in your local dictionary, if you know what I'm saying. Now, these are the most vicious of them all. The Travis Bros, the View Bros.
Right. they're very wry. I can tell you. There'll be, it's like you won't see it coming, but it'll be a very dry sort of evisceration.
Mm-hmm. Which always hurts the most, really.
You can sit comfortably knowing I don't think any of those guys are listening to my podcast. I'm the wettest fucking comedy host there is. I'm fucking dripping, always on. Absolutely obnoxious, and it's my life's work not to like fully mm-hmm. unleash it so that I don't ruin every social interaction I have.
Well, you're hired for the spectacle, sir. You're perfect.
Yeah, and
that's how I want to participate in the spectacle. Yeah. I want people mm-hmm. to just think I'm kind of funny. I want some people to think I'm kind of funny. I'm
it,
not
yeah.
Dude,
willing
too,
to
man.
Do anything that would be like a full-blown lie except for like, I yeah. love this fucking product. Thank you, SAG, after, you know, like that. Like, I wouldn't, but like these people are so comfortable faking their personas for money. And I'm saying this as a guy who wants to be an actor as well. Like, it feels so crazy that someone is like ready to like activate people to save the kids by breaking into a foster home or some shit yeah. for to make 80 grand a year or something like that. Like, it's just like, it stresses me out yeah. so much that people would make the most brutal decisions for like an mm-hmm. 8% raise in their fucking salary or something.
Interestingly, like, that's the profile of a lot of Q followers, is that they are, at least of the like the kind of summer brand of Save the Children Q followers, is that they are artists, musicians, editors, you know, whatever. They want to make something beautiful. They didn't make it as a rapper. They didn't make it as a YouTube star or whatever.
Or a
and
screenwriter.
And then yeah. they turn to this stuff because, hey, maybe my church is telling me some stuff, so that fits with it. But also, hey, it's a community. And within this, suddenly I'm getting views and people are listening to me now that I've been doing this instead of like whatever I tried, like sketch comedy. I mean, every single one, it's crazy. This whole generation, you go to their YouTube, you trace it back, and they're all like, I tried to write a little like show. I tried this podcast. I wanted to do this. And
so many ex-comedians, I think, as a comedian, I would even say this, if you don't want to retire, you have to just kill, like, you have to be killed. Like, it should be like euthanized comedians, because ex-comedians seem yes. to be some of the most dangerous people yes. on the planet. It feels
there's
like
there's Rogan, but there's also the Tripoli guy, like who's on the he was on the All Things Comedy, I guess, and then they got kicked off and they went to Patreon
yeah.
and are making way more money, I bet, now. I think they're higher than us, maybe.
Well, like, a lot of people who touch the third rail of fucking right-wing stuff, the people who dabble in it make a little bit of money. The people who have Candace Owens on their quote-unquote comedy podcast trying to yeah. pretend that like they're
she's
not
hilarious.
Star fuckers. Yeah,
she's
it's
so
like,
funny.
That's
one of the
thing.
Funniest people alive.
There's such star fuckery that yeah. something that they would never cop to is like, oh, the liberal, you know, we hate Hollywood, this, everyone's a yeah. star fucker. And then it's like, Matt Gaetz is here. And it's like, yes, like fucking yeah. Venmo me for salad, yeah. please.
For ice cream. There's a whole circuit. There's a MAGA circuit now. So there's money to be made. That's like a whole circuit that's like kind of less embarrassing than just the Christian circuit where you can't even swear. It's like Christianity and extreme right wing politics mixed together in a way where you can actually swear and take drugs, basically.
Yeah,
and,
well, it's like once you get quote unquote canceled, you can go into this subterranean world where the canceled mm-hmm. people still make six figures a year somehow, like yeah. quote
well,
unquote
yeah.
being canceled.
And to add yeah. to that, when these folks get canned or kicked off or banned from your more mainstream platforms, what happens is that you automatically have this bigger audience who has also been kicked off, or you know, they're big tech censorship and all that stuff. And so in trying to get rid of this stuff, we are actually perpetuating it further and further, because they look at that, oh well, if you got kicked off of Twitter, well then you must have truth that they don't want to hear, you know.
You must have said something bad. Must have said something too real.
Too real, exactly. And so you have people who would never ever be able to make a living spouting conspiracy theories or doing that stuff. I mean, dude, look at when we were growing up. I mean, it was Art Bell. Art Bell had Coast to Coast AM. He had his radio show, and that was kind of the biggest sort of conspiracy, you know, mainstream sort of conspiracy celebrity. And it was in, you know, I don't think Art Bell was making, you know, a shit ton of money. But there's, you know, I mean, it's coupled also with, there's no gatekeeping anymore on content. Like Julian was saying, you know, it used to be if your content got somewhere where a lot of eyes were seeing it, you had to go through so many different, you know, so many different channels to even get to a place where your content was being heard.
Yeah, now even like Alex Jones, he had to go like on public access in Austin, right?
He had to find ways
to get on the air. But now everyone has public access all the time.
Alex Jones.
But it's just true, because you're right. Alex he Jones and footwork. I both have the same build and same orange colored skin does not mean we are friends at all. We just both all like right, to folks. Be burly and shirtless. Okay.
Time to post those Gabrus looking for food in the fridge images of that guy in boxers. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and now anyone, like, now someone could say the most fucked up shit and it could be make an image or a video that is a wrong lie that ends up in 500,000 people's pockets and in their morning routine, and then gets whatever, like the new version of the telephone game is, where 1,000 telephones are all like, it's a major conference call all happening at once. And it's like, now here's like the 11 spins on that. Like,
and
I use this example. Oh, my mom has like crazy right wing friend, and she, when Trump ran against Hillary in 2016, she said, "You're voting for Hillary, I bet, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course." And she's like, "Well, how do you feel about the bombs?" And she kept referring to the bombs, and I backed her all the way up to finally understand she meant Benghazi. And I'm like, my mom was like radicalized by something she misheard. And it's like, that could just happen. People are actively trying to radicalize people on purpose. Yeah,
absolutely.
And the worst part is that you have this game of telephone, and finally the last person to pick up the fucking receiver at the end of the line is a fucking congressperson or somebody that actually is in like a position of power that then goes onto stage and repeats it. I mean, that is a new, that's a new thing where you have it, and it builds into, you know, they know that they're not, you know, Paul Gosar knows that he's not going to get any fucking, get any liberal votes. So what does he do? He plays to where he knows he's going to, you know, where it's going to be the best. And if that means adopting some of these more extreme, you know, QAnon style beliefs, then he's going to go there. Maybe not because he like believes it, but because he knows that that's what his constituency wants. And I think that it is a fucked up, the GOP right now is a fucked up combination of guys like that, and then people who are actually red-pilled themselves, and they also believe it, and so they think that they are also speaking the truth.
The first archetype that you mentioned, people who are leaning into it because they know it'll help them win, is them wanting to remain having a fandom, is them wanting to remain as part of the spectacle, making the money. It's like, so
they look that day and it's like, what's trending? Oh, it's a QAnon thing. Well, that's what's trending today. I'm going to jump. And then people repeat it, like they'll read it, they'll repeat it in their speech, and oh, it worked in the speech. Okay, so someone else will use it. It's the same process as 4chan and 8chan or Facebook feeds. We're refining our posting until it works, and we're gathering stuff from each other to be like, okay, great, I'll just retweet this or I'll just repost this. And eventually, hey, let's do a collab. Like, I mean, it sucks. It's influencer fucking country.
Before we get out of here, I want to talk about a recent episode you guys had, which was maybe one of my favorites ever, because it combines two of my loves, which is extreme egotistical Hollywood alpha male and also cult shit. And so the Jim Caviezel episode of your of QAnon Anonymous pod, which I still can't say without just being an acronym, QAA. It's so fucking good. But the thing that stuck out the most is Caviezel is at that fucking conference. He's on video. Mm-hmm. And he says, I've seen horrors. What these are, what they're pulling these kids out of. Mm-hmm. And then in the next line, after the fucking emotional outburst, the next line is like, well, even though I have not personally seen them, I, you know, yes. And it's like, that used to be enough to be like, all right, motherfucker, you are a liar. And yeah. It's not, people just, it should have been enough to be like, not only are you a liar, but you should never work again. Like, that used to be enough. And
well,
now,
he's not a liar because he actually has probably watched Frazzle Drip and Tim Ballard probably played it for it. And in that video, you can't really see shit. So he probably tried to see it, but couldn't. And so he did just hear it. And so he's not lying. They're not lying about their appreciation for him. Where's the lie, Gabrus?
It's their imagination. It's when you stay up and you read, you know, for, you know, 72 hours, you watch Out of Shadows or whatever, and you hear about it and your imagination starts to run wild. It's becoming the same thing as I've seen it in their minds.
I mean, right. They're using the same trick. A lot of these people online who make up these horrors, they're using the same trick that horror filmmakers use, where they make the monster just a little bit out of view to allow the viewer to sort of make up their own horrors in their own head. And that's more horrifying than anything that could actually be imagine. So like, you know, so they're traumatizing themselves by basically tapping into their darkest fears and sort of more gruesome fantasies.
Yeah. And I feel like they had a good PR weapon in that when they were like, we're stopping pedophiles, something that like objectively everyone's against. Right. We're against yeah. pedophiles. But there's a lady doth protest too much element of this all where it's like, If I had a friend that constantly told me daily, like once a day, that he was very anti-pedophiles, I would start to assume some weird shit about that person because I'd be like, me too, man. So, but I don't have to say it. I don't feel the need to bring it up all the time. Right. Why are you so into, and I feel like filling your heads with that shit all the time of like, what's happening to these children? Knowing, even not knowing it's a lie, knowing it's a lie. And see, like the fact that you even choose to visualize and imagine that stuff is like horrifying.
Yeah, but that's because they think it's really one of those things where like 500,000 kids, I don't know, I don't remember, was it 80,000 children?
800,000, yeah. The stat that they always miscite is that they believe that there are 800,000 children stolen every year, just disappear. And like there, well, these 1.6 million parents approximately are just aren't talking right. about it for some reason.
Well, we can laugh at them or we can realize that if that was true, we'd also be fucking talking about it all the fucking time. When Epstein came out, I was talking about it all the fucking time. It's like, if it were true, then holy shit, their reaction kind of makes sense. But the yeah. problem is we have no control over what people consider true anymore. And nor did we ever, but the illusion is threadbare. It's worse than ever.
And you just said something that is another facet of the movement that really is, I love to try to process is, Epstein comes out and they're like, that's not the kind of pedophile we're talking about. It's like, wait, what? It's like Matt Gaetz is fucking 17-year-olds. And they're like, that's not what we're concerned about. It's like, wait, but you guys tell me every day that you're saving the children. This sounds like bad situations for children in both those. And
they,
it's
did,
like,
they did, to be fair to them, they did co-opt Epstein and say we were on this before, even though Q had never posted about it and it wasn't a focus. They did. They agree. I mean, and they bring Epstein up as like, you're a lib, and I'm trying to talk to you about QAnon and get you in. I'll talk to you about Epstein, which we can both
Epstein
agree
was
on.
Referenced in a couple Q drops. In further fairness, I would say, I think what their view was that basically is like, okay, well, Epstein is going after Epstein goes down, then he's going to like take down Hillary with her. They think that Hillary Clinton is basically above Epstein in the evil pedophile kind of hierarchy. That of course yeah. didn't happen. He just died in prison. Whatever secrets that he carries in his head just died with him. We've been denied justice yet again.
Well, and that's a famous QAnon tactic, is they will take one real thing like Epstein and say, because this was real with Epstein, that means that all of the crazy shit that I have no evidence for must also be real. You know,
For example, believe that on Little St. James, there are many layers underneath in which children were eaten, like, and sacrificed. I'm like, it's called Pedophile Island. Why is that not enough for you? Why is that not horrifying enough for you? Just roll with what we know to be true, which is already wretched and unforgivable and demands answers. Instead, you see there's like, it's like it needs to be punched up. I need a little more excitement.
It's because
this is the reboot, brother. We need to go fucking big.
I think it's because it's public. That's the thing. That QAnon, the happy place to be in is that things are about to happen, and oh my god, it's gonna be the best iota so of all time. When something actually happens and there's evidence, the truth is, as terrifying as it can be, it's boring because it's there and there's evidence and stuff. There's no place for the imagination to go, and
there's no wiggle room to be more in your POV.
And exactly, like, if you can't say, like, oh man, I'm so worried about, like, this massive, like, pedophile trafficking scandal. It's like, oh, like, the biggest, like, known pedophile and child trafficker, like, got arrested and went to jail. It's like, because of the own injustice that they believe they're experiencing in their own life, they have to have something to keep going on to and to keep holding on to, because if it's like, oh well, like, this guy killed himself in jail or whatever, but my life is still the exact same, and I don't have, like, my liberal friends coming up to me and going, like, oh my god, I was so sorry to have doubted you, oh I feel terrible, you were right all along, Steve, you were right. They're like, that's not happening. So, like, that must be the first domino. You know, I mean, that is, I think, when we talk about the stickiness of QAnon, they want it to be sticky. They want it to keep going. If the storm happens, what else is there? They go back to their shitty life. You know, it's like,
they can't do something that would be objectively what they're saying. Like, it can't occur. They're saying has to happen. So in the binary of, like, Hillary gunned down in the streets by, you know, the national or activated police force, whatever they believe, like that can never happen. So if they get close to anything, they have to move the goalposts. It has to be bigger. It has to be crazier. Yeah.
If Hillary Clinton got arrested, it would be like, Bill's time is coming, and I've heard he's going to get the death penalty. You know,
right?
Or now it's Barack Obama. You know, it's got to. It's really just, I hate all these fucking politicians that seem better than me, and that combined with extreme, you know, Christian ideology, satanic panic, is the hurricane. You know, that is QAnon.
Anyways, yeah, Jim Caviezel is really funny because he's stupid.
I mean, the highlight of some of it is that it's like, oh, right, you're also talking about, like, a dumb, handsome guy. Like, a guy who, like, broke into his career by being, like, purely on what he looks like on video. Like,
interestingly, he's a perfect actor for, like, those 70s movies where there's very little dialogue and you just have to look like this steely-eyed, inscrutable guy. I love it.
Yeah, like one of those Charles Bronson movies where he takes it and just knocks out all of his own lines from the script before they shoot, where he's like, nah, you don't have to say this. You don't have to say this. Just cut to my eyes, cut to my mustache, cut to me killing the guy, and we're out of there. Cut to my daughter getting raped in, like, you know, 40% of his movies. And then,
oh God.
Cut to me getting revenge. Guys, thank you so much for fucking taking time on your Friday to talk to me and some shitheads about QAnon. I have a dumb question that I feel is like a weird pimp at the end, but are there anything normal people can do in, like, a small, like, a low lift thing that normal people could do to, like, fucking throw a few sandbags against the rising tide of this dangerous right-wing conspiracy?
I always tell people, like, it's like the advice I always give is like, it's like my, you know, my, they say like my, my mother, my friend, my sibling is sort of falling down the rabbit hole. My number one advice is always get them away from the computer, get them to do literally anything else, get them to go on a hike, get them into a sport, get their brains activated and sort of, finding fulfillment in anything besides just being online, because this is really, really it. They get addicted. It's addicting. They get addicted to the dopamine feeling of like discovering things and being shocked and falling down the rabbit hole. And if you want to, you know, escape that cycle, you need to retrain your brain in order to find things other than just moving the symbols around on your phone fulfilling.
Yeah, if it's possible, you know, because sometimes, you know, it's understandable if relationships are, you know, unrepairable. You know, a family member says something to you that's unforgivable. I understand that. But if you can, if it's possible, if you have the mental capacity to not push them away and to try to bring them in, because I think what Travis is touching on is that when other aspects of your life, the stuff that's outside of the computer, are going well and feel like you have meaning there, the anger that propels you to keep studying something like QAnon becomes less potent. Mm-hmm. And the further amount of time you spend away from that anger is good. I'll give you a really quick example. Around the 2016 election, I was driving home from my assistant job, and I was trying to find the debates on the radio because I wanted to listen to the debates. And the only radio station that I found that was playing it was LA's sort of like conservative radio station. And I turned it to that. And then the next day when I got into the car, the station was still on that, and I listened to it as I drove. As I drove to work, and I listened to it as I drove back, and it was fascinating to me because these were a bunch of points of view that I'd never really heard of before. You know, I was, you know, my news digestion was basically, you know, CNN's website, and I found myself getting angrier and angrier the more I listened to it, and it wasn't really until I turned it off and just, you know, stopped listening to all of that shit that I kind of, you know, remembered what it was like to not be angry about politics, or, you know, to think that, you know, there was some, you know, machine that is, you know, designed to, you know, keep me down or whatever. And so I agree. I think that getting them away from the content and into something real that can provide any kind of enjoyment or sense of community has a chance to sort of help de-radicalize.
Yeah, the computer feels dangerous for older people for some reason. It feels like it's hack to say, but like my parents' generation told our generation, be careful on the computer. Like, there are bad people out to get you on the computer. All right. It's like, good. Thank you, Mom. I will. And then they are now being gotten by bad people on the computer. It's like, I don't.
Yeah.
They're now always friends with strangers. Like, all the shit we were told not to do.
It's like always a timeline, though. Like, these are circumstances that arise in a person's life where they end up going down the rabbit hole. Those can fade. Those circumstances can change. And I think that, you know, being away from the computer is definitely one circumstance. It's not to say you can't use the internet. It's going to do this exactly to your brain. It's just there are times in people's lives where they're particularly fragile or furious, or there's a variety of different things at play where it's like, this is not going to help. That's it.
Yeah, I was feeling like mad anxious for like a week out of nowhere. And I was just like so stressed. And then like we sat down for dinner and my wife's like, all right, another episode of The Sopranos. And I was like, oh, you know what? I think if watching 3 hours of like violence and people hope just getting by on the skin of their teeth alive, like every night has kind of maybe sunk into me a little bit.
And that's breathing. Like, Tony's breathing gives me anxiety because he's so good at replicating that, like, I'm about to have a panic attack breathing.
Yeah, same.
I sound like Gandolfini when I eat a fucking hero.
You know what, Gabrus? You know what I would recommend? If you log on to PBS, I think it's like $4 a month or whatever to subscribe to PBS, and they've got like 300 episodes of Antiques Roadshow. There's nothing scary there, man. It's you're learning.
What the fuck is wrong with you? No one's even paying him for this.
You're learning history. You know, you're seeing regular people stumble across treasures.
Talking about how much it costs per month and shit.
Antiques Roadshow.
Well, I didn't want to mislead people and say it's free. I didn't want to mislead anybody and say that it's free. But man, yeah, when I turned off The Sopranos and turned to Antiques Roadshow, I did feel a noticeable drop in my anxiety spikes.
So yeah, good call, Julian. Is there anything you guys want to plug? Let the people, my listeners, know. I mean, obviously, I'll tag all you guys and the show in the.
Yeah,
where the announcement of this release or whatever. But is there, let the listeners know for the people who can't read and are just from my beautiful voice.
You know, there's the podcast. You can search QAnon Anonymous anywhere. Those are found. And then we have some Twitch channels. I do Julian Field. We have QAnon Anonymous. Jake has Florida Flynn and Liv has Liv Agar, A-G-A-R. Those are all people who are involved in our podcast. Yeah. And then other than that, nothing, you know, just enjoy life. I mean, a lot of our shit's free. So, you know, you don't have to pay.
I highly recommend checking out their podcast. I think the Jim Caviezel podcast, which is not a normal format for you guys, is a good one for my listeners because we also love Hollywood alphas who trained with Navy SEALs once and think like they're officially part of the Special Forces. I was talking briefly with this about Julian because like that shit where like John Krasinski had like an alt on Twitter and he's like, you know, John is weapons trained, 6'3" and has learned Krav Maga from a Navy SEAL, like, and responded to all these like anti-Jack. Oh yeah.
Do you know that? Do you fucking understand, dude, how fucking jacked this guy is I'm defending on Twitter? Do you even understand the kind of training he's been through, what his life is like? He had to play a guy fighting nuclear Venezuela for Amazon Prime, okay? That's the kind of shit that only the most real soldiers go through.
I think it's...
Wait, one last thing. I do want to say Travis View, you should go follow him, Travis_View on Twitter, because he doesn't have a Twitch, so I felt bad. He's getting no plugs over there.
No personal plugs. He shows some of his old high school drama performances on his Twitter. It's wonderful to follow.
He posts
highly
a lot.
Picture of me playing.
You keep seeing that he's retweeting it with new quote tweets and stuff, and you're like, he's Eric Alpering me.
He's posting childhood photos all week, this whole week. It's Travis week.
The soldier shit, I'll let you guys go right after this, but the soldier shit we were just talking about, like, everybody thinks they're a soldier. That's like a bad thing too. There's like some new thing where it's like, it's about fighting. It's about saving everything's combat. Yeah. Everything's like heroes have guns. They shoot bad guys. Like there's so much digital soldier.
We live in a diseased, militaristic, obsessed society. We are so far gone with militarism. It's just the air we breathe and the water we swim in.
Yeah, and based on the fact I know we're the same age due to GT Dinos, like the movies that I grew up watching were all about like a one white guy who had to be outside the law to kill a bunch of like minorities or to like fight in a war where it's like the rules of engagement are off. We're cutting fucking people's heads off. Like the shit, like Trump's favorite movie was Bloodsport. It's like, that's not good. Like as those are my favorite movies, that's just not a good headspace to be in for looking for like who you consider a hero or like what you consider a good society.
Yeah. Also in Bloodsport, it's one of the most racist portrayals of a black person I've ever seen in any movie is the black fighter in that movie.
Yeah. The one of two black fighters is he does monkey style kung fu.
Literally, he's up in trees and shit. It is awful.
It's brutal. And the French guy wears a beret, and the Middle Eastern guy wears a headpiece. That's
please
all
don't
bad.
Call. Please don't call Jean-Claude Van Damme French. Please.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
It's okay.
Belgium. He's the muscles from Brussels, baby.
He's a Belgian bitch.
QAnon Anonymous podcast. Thank you guys so much for coming on. Give them a follow, and I appreciate this. I hope your podcast has to shift topics in the near future. I hope you guys have to find something new. I don't want to root against your financial success because I really enjoy everything.
More people are coming out to like tell me, you know, I told them, hey, you can leak stuff to me about Hollywood, and like I have a whole dossier on this guy Gabrus. People have worked with him for years, and like the stories, I mean, the impressions he does, obviously outrageous. So I'll be releasing that soon.
All right, yeah, check that out on his Twitch. He's going to be showing some of my old character sketches. Where it was the 90s. All right. Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy, I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's actually, it's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to, like, see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane. It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on! Do it now!